With the length of your career, John, this may be slightly difficult, but looking back over all those years you played for Gloucester, let's make you a selection committee of one. Who would you pick in your team for Gloucester, all those players you've played with? Let's start at fullback. Who would you have at fullback?
Well, I think it would have to be Don Rutherford. He was just, he'd catch anything. He was a good goal kicker. I'm probably picking Don because of his all-round, what he brought to Gloucester as a rugby club, maybe more so than... So I probably will have to reciprocate with that one and come back to my old mate, Eric Stevens, I think. Eric, as a fullback, never missed easy kicks at all. Great under the high ball, could tackle. Yeah, it's difficult because you got Eric Stevens, you got Butler, and you got Rutherford, and they all had different qualities in this. That is a difficult one, but pick one of three of those three.
How many wings do you want to pick?
I would put the lad who didn't play any length of time at all, but I think Stuart Dix and Bob Clunes. And Stuart Dix, I think he might have had a year down here, I'm not sure how long he, but Stuart Dix, I mean, he scored tries for fun, and Bob Clunes, you know, I think it would have to be Bob Clunes.
And in the centre alongside you?
Rich Jardine, I think. Richard could tackle, he was leggy. He was very unflappable. Yeah, I think Richard. And 10, you had a situation where they asked Mickey Booth who the best outside half was he ever played with. And he said, Terry Hobson. And they said, and who was the worst? And he said, Terry Hobson. You know, so I think for his match-winning ability, Terry Hobson would have to go in there. Yeah, I mean, he was enigmatic, but I think you'd have to pick him for his ability. Tommy Palmer running close. I mean, his work rate against Terry's work rate was... You know, he was phenomenal. You didn't lose anything all round by playing Tommy, but Terry just had that innate ability to turn a game, you know, and his kicking was phenomenal.
The scrum half?
I'd have to go with Mickey. Mickey just all round was the best, yeah.
Back row?
It's a difficult one. I'd have to put Dick Smith in there. Open side. He didn't play there very long. And unfortunately, if Jim Jarrett would have stayed number eight, I think he would have been a legend as a number eight. But we just didn't have any what I call... stars at number eight, but I think I'd have to probably put Mike Potter in there for the short time he played. He was such a strong guy and such a hard working number eight, good at the back of the line out. It made rucks and mauls and was tremendously strong and held the side together, did things, he tidied things up, and yeah.
Blind it's side. Interesting you should pick Potts and Dick Smith because, you know, we've done quite a few of these interviews now and both of them seem to particularly come out as players.
Yeah, and...
You know, rated very highly by their teammates.
Both were, that's why I was coming in with Potts, he was a player's player and a lot of spectators probably didn't even see what he was doing, you know? He was just a workhorse, and he liked his couple of pints of beer before the match, and you know, he'd play, he'd have two or three pints on a Friday night, and that was his habit, and always played well, fit. He'd have a couple of three cigarettes, and as was the days in Blindside, I mean, it's a no-brainer, really, is John Watkins, as you'd pick, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think John started at number eight, but just wasn't big enough to play number eight. He lost his weight and got down to about 13.8, 13.9, and it wasn't really big enough for Blindside, but but for what he did, he obviously was. But
it was a problem, wasn't it? Because for England, because you had Tony Neary at open side, so you had a very small back row if you played both of them.
Tony was bigger than John.
Yeah,
I mean, Tony would have been 14.7. I often thought John had got too light for you know, but it didn't seem to affect his game. You know, I mean, he still was pretty phenomenal. So that would be the back row I'd go for, a real flash open sizing dick who could really put a 10 in his pocket, and was good with the ball in his hands. John was good with the ball in his hands, and Pop was a solid rock in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Second row?
Alan Brin will have to go in there. Two jumper and best scrummager, I suppose. And I'd have to put then, I'd probably go with the guy really, I think Alan really took his place, so I can't, along with Alan Brin was Roy Long, who was before him, and Roy Long came from two to start jumping four. And I'd probably put Roy Long in there, along looking there as Baggy Hudson and Brian Green. In Jim Jarrett, so with Roy Long, I'd probably go along with Jim Jarrett with his ability. Between Roy Long, I'd probably have to pick Jim, because Jim jumped it for all his career, whereas Roy got moved from two to four from Gloucester to put Alan Brin in there. So I'd probably go Jim Jarrett in there.
Yeah. And props?
Burton goes in with me as a prop, but problem is he was tighted, and so was Blakeway. So, in, without being harsh, if I had to pick between Blakeway and Burton, I got difficulty picking that. I think Blakeway was obviously the strongest scrummager, and Burton was Animal Cunning. Luckily enough, you had a squad system, so we could pick the two there with Cowlin at loose head, and without a shadow of doubt, Mike Nichols is hooker. But Mike Burton was a very, very good scrummager, and like I say, an Animal Cunning, and Blakeway was just a rock. A different type of prop, you know. Blakeway was obviously shorter, and I think Blakeway also played loose head. So if you look along with three of Blakeway, Cowlin, and Burton, those were, you know, and I'd have to put alongside that in the first era, but I didn't see him play long enough. I'd have to have Roy Folk bracketed in close to them, though I was young and inexperienced, but he made a tremendous impression on me.
Hmm.
Yeah.